You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
Carolyn Allred, August 16th, 1937.
Alice Victor Allred, February 21st, 1936.
0.1%. That's how many people have a 70th wedding anniversary.
I had the special privilege of meeting and speaking with Carolyn and Ellis Allred. They are amongst a very small number of people who make it to their platinum anniversary. I believe their devotion to God and one another allowed them to reach such an incredible milestone. The importance they place on family and faith is summed up in their family creed, which reads, "In our family, we believe in celebrating together our faith, our heritage, and our traditions. We believe in laughing often and loving always. We believe we were brought together to support and care for each other. We believe that everyone's feelings count and the uniqueness of each of us strengthens all of us. We believe in the power of forgiveness to heal and the power to love to carry us through tough times. We believe that we are recognized as an eternal family by our Heavenly Father who loves each and every one of us equally." The interview contained in this episode was recorded on April 14th, 2023. Just 17 days later, Ellis passed on to the next life. He's missed by so many and left a legacy of love, hard work, and service. I feel so honored that I was able to meet him and speak with him and Carolyn together about their life and their marriage. This is a unique episode because instead of focusing on each of their lives individually, we got to talk about their relationship and love for one another and life together in honor of 70 years of marriage. They've shared a wonderful life of happy memories. However, we'll start with some hard experiences in their younger years. Both Carolyn and Ellis lost loved ones early on in life. When he was only 12 years old, Ellis lost his brother-in-law in a tragic Jeep accident.
Dad had purchased an army Jeep to run around the farm in. Ellis's dad and Marcella's husband, Brian, who was home from the army on furlough, and Ellis is a young man. He was 12. And they went into the mountains.
My brother-in-law was driving the Jeep. We had been on a safari, you might say, to try to get a deer. And we were coming back just at dusk. We had brakes. Everything seemed fine. As we come down this dugway, we started down. I was in the middle in the hole in between the two drivers. It was real steep going down that first part. And there's a twist in the road. And later I found a rock that was about 18 inches in diameter, big rock. We come down around, gaining up speed all the time. Oh, and discovered by then we had no brakes. They were just gone, disappeared. That big rock, it was sticking out of the ground, and it just picked us up and flipped it. And over in, first thing that I noticed was I was out of the Jeep, basically on a rock, looking at what just happened. I was a good 100 yards from the Jeep. The Jeep had rolled in, sure enough, severely injured. Right. I mean, why was I not what?
It truly is a miracle that Ellis survived that tragic accident. And unfortunately, that wasn't the only death that Ellis dealt with in his youth. He had two brothers-in-law that were killed in the war. and sadly, Carolyn experienced the same. Her brother was killed while fighting in World War II.
My brother was a pilot in World War II and was killed in action. He was missing, and it was a very traumatic time in our home. For 6 weeks, I watched my mother and dad's hair turn white in 6 weeks. We're wondering if he would come home. My sister, her girlfriends were all riding to soldiers, and they would go to the post office every day at a certain break between classes. And this one day, my sister got mom and dad's mail out, and there was a letter from the War Department, and she opened it, and it said he was missing. She got her older sister out of high school, and they went and took the news to mother and dad. And he used to help my dad with the cattle. And when he passed away, it was really difficult for my dad to do alone. And when I started dating Ellis, my dad took a liking to him immediately because he reminded him of my brother Dean. Ellis rode the horse and hauled hay with him and helped take care of the cattle. And Ellis played basketball, and Dean had played basketball, and Dad had never been to a game after Dean died, but he went and watched Ellis play and loved watching his games.
Ellis was incredibly hardworking, especially for someone so young. He was taught to work hard on his family's farm, where he was given a lot of responsibility.
My father worked in the coal mines in southeastern Utah, and that was rough work, very hard. He lived in a coal mining camp in Standardville. He'd just come home usually every other weekend, but he was very meticulous in writing out and making sure I knew and what to do, and I had plenty of work to do. So I worked hard at school and with the cattle and everything. I was given a lot of responsibility when I was young.
At a young age, both Carolyn and Ellis were well acquainted with loss and hard work. They were two good kids raised in rural Utah. And it was while they were still kids during high school that they met and fell in love.
There were several little towns that made up the high school. We were South Emory. And when the Emory students started coming to Farron, where the school was, I had my eye on Ellis because our older sisters and their husbands were friends. And I was really curious about Ellis. And when I saw how handsome he was, I was really interested. And we were in the same crowd. We did a lot of things together as a group. And I kept wishing he would ask me out. And when he didn't, I got up my courage and asked him to a girls' choice dance.
My mother and Carolyn teaming up, conspiring against me.
And I'll always be grateful to his mother. She thought because I had taken him to the girls' choice dance that it would be a nice gesture if he would take me to prom. And so he asked me to prom. And after those two big events that we had had dates for, we pretty much were together for a Friday night date also. And most of our dating were dances. Because after the basketball games, every home game, we had a dance. And they had a band come in, and we had great dances, and most of our dating were dances. I had to go get him, drive over and get him, and I was only 15, and I didn't have a driver's license. In our farming communities, it wasn't unusual for under 16 to be found driving.
She'd drive her car 15 miles to the town I lived in, pick me up, and I'd drive the car the rest of the night.
And then we were legal.
The two lovebirds enjoyed dating during their high school years. And one of the big highlights of that era was the state basketball tournament in which Ellis played.
South Emory hadn't been to state for years, and our whole town shut down. The grocery stores, the drug stores, everyone closed and went to Provo. The games were held at Smith Field House, and it was really a special experience.
We had not lost a game all year. It was like really a letdown because we fully intended to win state, and we didn't. The Delta Rabbits beat us. The other key members on our basketball team, we were close buddies all through high school.
Not only was Ellis a good athlete and ball player, he had dance moves too.
Probably the most important thing is we liked to dance. And we were sweethearts. Things just evolved.
What he won't tell you is he was voted the best dancer in the high school. What? That was one of the things I liked, is that he was so fun to dance with. He was so handsome, and he was a cowboy. I loved it when he wore his boots and his cowboy hat.
Which was most of the time.
Yeah, that's what guys wore.
Yeah, a wide-brimmed felt hat. You took care of that hat. It was part of your body. It seemed like, I mean, about the same. The hat that I wore out to milk the cows in the evening or morning was a different hat than when I went on a date.
The more we dated, the more we could see our future together, and we wanted to be together. And it kind of just felt that way from the beginning. We're for each other. We need to get married and build a life together, have a family in it. It just kind of evolved. It wasn't a one big proposal thing. It was just kind of understood, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think in my mind, there was no question about me marrying her. And I felt like she felt the same way about me. One of the primary conversations we were having was about, do we really love each other? And can we be good enough and strong enough and everything to raise the family that was coming? And it seemed like it was just time to let the Lord know we're on board and we'll raise it. Family and do the best we can. So I think we just kind of bowed our necks and went to it. And 70 years later, we're never happier than we are today. I don't think anyway.
We were married between his junior and senior year. I was 16 and he was 17. We were married at my parents' home in Farron, Utah. It was
in her house.
The immediate family.
Her house was small.
Our state president married us. And my sister was my bridesmaid. Ellis's basketball buddy was his best man. We went to Provo for our honeymoon, which was a long way.
After the wedding and their very exotic honeymoon, the couple moved to Salt Lake for the summer to work.
His sister lived in Salt Lake City, going to school to be a nurse, and her husband was in medical school, and they ran a boarding house, and she needed help in the kitchen, and she said it would be an ideal way to learn how to cook, and she was an excellent cook. She prepared two meals for her boarders. Most of them were the football players.
Those guys could eat.
Yes, the football players. We spent the whole summer there.
I just answered an ad in the paper, and a company called Fitwell Artificial Limb Company. And so there was about 15 to 20 men making wooden legs for the soldiers. And I was the only one that worked there that didn't have an artificial limb. I'd go out on the weekends and find a grove of black willowwood trees, and we shipped wooden legs all over the world. I learned a lot.
After a summer of hard work, the newlyweds returned to Emory County so Ellis could finish up high school. The happy couple welcomed their first two children around this time. A year after their wedding, they were able to be sealed in the Manti Temple for time and all eternity.
I didn't go back to school because I had a baby. He did his senior year in South Emory.
The second one came after we graduated.
Our oldest one was Jolynn. She kind of took care of Wayne. That's why they were so close, like twins. Watched out for him. And then as years went on, that role changed and he looked out for her. Those two were very close growing up. They were a year
13
apart.
13 months.
And they were like twins. They looked like twins and people thought they were twins.
After back-to-back babies, Ellis and Carolyn spaced the rest out just a little bit more. After number two, 5 years. After number three, 5 years. And a 7-year gap between their fourth and fifth children.
About the time my baby would be going to school, I would have another baby.
We spaced our kids out. It was easy. Yeah.
They were not close together, and I didn't feel overwhelmed. We have grown up with our children and been able to see them accomplish so many things.
Not long after graduating high school, and around the time their second, Wayne, was born, Ellis was working hard to support his growing family, and Carolyn was tending the little ones. It was then the family decided to move to Utah County.
When we moved to American Fork, Ellis worked for the Hanson Construction Company. But in the winter time, there were so many days that the weather was bad that they didn't work. But we had a milk cow in American Fork, so we always had milk for our babies. But one day, he rode to Provo with a brother-in-law who is a plumber, and he had to go get some material, and Ellis just rode with him. And on the way, his brother-in-law said to him, "Ellis, why don't you apply here with Provo Plumbing? This is a really good company, and you surely wouldn't be out of work in the winter." So he went in and interviewed and was hired. And his job was a truck driver for the company that he worked for 43 years and ended up owning the company. Worked his way up from truck driver to counter to salesman. He worked in sales the majority of the time we were raising our family. And then they decided to divide the plumbing from the heating. So when they divided, everyone was buying stock. And we put everything we had saved into stock in that company. And we ended up owning the most stock. And so they made him the manager over the heating. And it became a totally different company than the plumbing. And they called it Contractor's Supply.
The job with Provo Plumbing, which later became Contractor Supply, caused the family to move to Provo.
When we moved to Provo, we moved into a home that Ellis's brother-in-law had lived in growing up as a child. So we lived in that house for a couple of years. And while we were living there, the owner of Provo Plumbing that he was working for asked us if we would consider moving into a little house that the company owned that was in the middle of their pipe yard. And it was a security thing to have somebody live in that house. And the thing that was wonderful about the deal, no rent. All we had to do was pay the taxes, which allowed us to save enough money to buy a building lot in Orem. So the first house that we owned was in Orem.
It's almost embarrassing by today's standards, but our first loan that we got was for $9,300, basically.
We were able to pay that off and own that house. Really exciting when we didn't have a house payment. Our third child was Lisa. She was a Christmas baby. Lisa was born in Provo Hospital, and Jason was born in Provo Hospital, both of them while we lived in Orem. And then we decided to build a bigger house, but we didn't know where we wanted to build. So we looked at everything from Spanish Fork to Alpine. And mostly we prayed a lot about where would be a good place to raise our family and hoping the Lord would guide us to the right place. And I remember one of the things I really wanted was a lot with a tree on it. And we fortunately found a house in Pleasant Grove that actually we were buying a little chunk of an orchard. So we had cherry trees all around us in our lot in Pleasant Grove, which ended up to be an interesting part of our life. By then, our children were, a couple of them were teenagers, and everybody got up early before daylight and picked cherries before it got hot. And then we would take a big truckload over to the cannery in
Linden.
Cannery in Linden.
While they were living in Pleasant Grove, Carolyn and Ellis had their last daughter, Vicky. Their family life was full, fun, and busy. The kids were and still are a real source of joy for their parents.
They were good students. They wanted to learn. I was always so thrilled when I went to parent visiting day because I had such good reports on my children that I came home just on top of the world. And they were interested in all the activities.
And sports.
Both of our boys played baseball and basketball. And they were on the swimming team. Vicky and Lisa were both on the swim team. Jolynn didn't like the competition of swim team. She chose to do synchronized swimming. And when she was a junior, she decided to run for Miss Pleasant Grove competition. Her talent that she did was synchronized swimming, and she filmed it. She didn't win queen, but she was first attendant. Wayne played for Weber State and Jason for Southern Utah. When Jason graduated, Ellis said, "I don't know what we'll do on Friday night. We've gone to get ball games all our life." And Vicky put her hands on her hips and said, "Don't you think I'll make the team, Dad?" She had learned how to play football at recess with the boys, and she was captain of the team. And it was really fun to go into her world of athletics. She played basketball in high school and volleyball in high school, and she received a volleyball scholarship and played for College of Southern Idaho.
All right.
And we planned our life around the ball games. They had to set goals, and they had to work toward them. In the middle of all of that, the church had a program called the Lamanite Program. And when Ellis was bishop, every year they would be looking for families to house students that needed an education, and the church would bus them from Arizona. They would come up and stay the school year. And we prayed about it, and everyone decided this was the year we should have a Lamanite student. So we received a little boy called Emerson Davis. He was only 8 years old. His mother and dad didn't think he was old enough to be on placement. And he blended in with our family so well. Because he was young, he just followed our way of doing things and became Emerson Allred. And he stayed with us for 8 years. And just before his senior year, he said he didn't want to go home this summer. He wanted to stay and work. And we told him that was all right, but his family were lonesome for him, and we thought he should go home and spend a couple of weeks, and then we'd come and get him. Well, when he got home, his family had moved, so he was terribly disappointed. He didn't get to come back and graduate. Well, he has remained a foster son and calls us often, visits us often. We have been to his house, gotten acquainted with his wife. He has two children. He just became our third boy. So we have three girls and three boys.
He's our own.
Once all of their kids were grown, Ellis and Carolyn decided it was time to serve a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
We didn't make a request of any certain kind of mission or any place we wanted to go. We said we would do what the Lord wanted. And when we received our call, it was to London, England, in the Family History Center. Neither of us had had any training in family history. Neither of us knew how to do computer. So I decided if Nephi could build a ship with the Lord's help, I could learn the computer. And we flew out in 2000, year 2000, to go to London. We got acquainted with all the missionaries. They often taught in our flat, and we had some wonderful mission experiences.
I don't know why I'm such a boob to speak up, but our mission was to give two kids that never did know much, but were willing to try a lot of things. There's not a better thing we could have done.
Where his tender feelings come from is we had, besides the Family History Center, we were assigned award. We had 50 different nationalities in our ward. The bishop asked him to help the men who had been baptized and had not progressed in the priesthood. And that class was very special to him. I'm sure that's what brings the tears, because those relationships he had with those men who had come from other countries, his class all progressed and became elders.
Better off now than they was.
My calling was chorister in the Relief Society. The experiences I had in there were miraculous. Several women come up and say, please teach us about the pioneers. So that was a choice experience.
Along with their mission in England, the Allreds served faithfully in the church throughout their life. And for Ellis, being stake president was a time of his life that he deeply treasured.
I enjoyed being stake president. When I first called, one thing that I noticed right off is we had a lot of widows, some like 40 widow ladies in our ward. The old part of town and little bitty houses. I used to I'd take my noon hour from work, pick out one of the widows every day. Cool. The old visitor dream.
He was managing Contractor Supply, and they had opened a branch in Salt Lake, and they were about to open a branch in St. George, just getting ready to open it when he was called. And Von J. Featherstone called him, and he promised him if he would give the time to the job of state president, that it would never be
a burden. Boss man, that blessing.
That was true. His business did really well.
It's not every day you get to talk to a couple who's been married for 7 decades. I took the opportunity to ask what the secret is to a long-lasting, happy marriage.
I would say putting the other one first. And always looking for the good in them. It's so easy to criticize your companion when you blend two different families, two different people, two different lifestyles. There's a lot of adjustments. Working through it and being committed to make it work. If you look for the good in your companion, always, instead of the faults, instead of finding faults, and it'll always be there.
The secret is love your companion more tomorrow than you did today.
The most important thing to me is my family can be...
Somehow I knew she was going to say that.
Take your answer, huh? But I was a stay-at-home mom. Now, more than ever, I appreciate that opportunity I had to be able to stay home and take care of my children. Because I was home when they came home from school. They had a snack and told me about school. We always had time to talk, and then we always had dinner together. We waited till Dad came home from work and had dinner together every night. I would hope that we could have a forever family, and we've always talked about not having any empty chairs in our circle.
When we first got married, when we went through the temple to be sealed, the general authority that I was standing in front of at the time said, his promise was that if we would take care of the little things in our lives, the big things would take care of themselves. But you know, it hasn't happened with everything, every single thing, but pretty hard to not had more problems than we've had, really. We've been blessed.
Thank you to the Allred family for allowing me to interview such an inspirational couple. My deepest condolences go out to your family. I'll forever be grateful that I got to meet Ellis and hear his story. If there's someone you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email me at hearingourheritage@gmail.com.